From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Today, the 22nd installment in our ongoing conversation with Professor Luciana Bone about the history of the Soviet Union. We're working now on item two of the agenda we set last week, looking at Trotsky and Lenin in the years after 1905 and a bunch of touchstones going through. So let's pick it up there. First of all, Happy New Year. Pleasure to speak with you.
Pleasure always mine, Don. Happy New Year.
Thank you very much.
We need a happy one.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Well, let's try to survive this one first and see how it goes after that. So let's pick it up where we left off.
Okay. Well, we're exploring the question, what was Trotsky's role in the context of the Russian Revolution? And to answer, we have to focus on some dates and some important dates. So I'm just giving a little introduction here to,
yeah, perfect,
to pick,
yeah,
up.
Very good.
Where we left off. So to answer, who exactly was Trotsky in the Russian Revolution? We have to focus on these dates. 1903, which we did last week, which was the Second Party Congress of the Russian Social Democratic Labor Party, and which saw the split between the revolutionary Bolsheviks and the reformist Mensheviks, and in which Trotsky took the Menshevik side. 1905, I want to talk about today, the 1905 revolution, and the question, how did Trotsky in Petrograd and Lenin in Moscow compare? How did their activities compare? The next date is the period of confusion, 1905-1917, the years between the two revolutions. What were Trotsky's activities? This is where the Prague and the Vienna Conference come in. And, of course, 1917, who was the leader of the October insurrection, Trotsky or Lenin's Bolshevik Party. So who knows how far we'll get today, but we need to frame the question of the 1905 revolution.
Right.
So last week we discussed the formation of the Russian Social Democratic Party,
yep,
Labor Party in 1893, the split at the Second Party Congress in 1903, within the Russian Socialist Democratic Labor Party, between the Bolsheviks and the Mensheviks, which was triggered by, or announced, I should say, by Lenin's What Then Must We Do? And his insistence that Marxists should form a political party, a vanguard party of dedicated revolutionaries to spread Marxist political ideas among the workers. This vanguard party of that would restrict and contain, that would restrict membership to professional revolutionaries, was contrary to the Martov faction of the Mensheviks, and they split. So what you have is really a split between a revolutionary and a reformist party, and the reformist party was nicknamed by Lenin the party of opportunists.
Yeah.
Now, just a little bit about because last time we talked about Lenin, just a little bit of background on Trotsky. We have to realize that Martov was really Trotsky's tutor, and Julius Martov was actually a charismatic figure. Lenin was never really... Lenin said he was sorry that he couldn't get Martov to join the Bolsheviks. So he... Yeah. excuse me. Yeah. But anyway, background, just a short background to Trotsky. He began as a revolutionary populist, practically Narodnik, and opposed Marxism in the very beginning, but his first wife turned him towards Marxism. In 1898, he was arrested for organizing the South Russian Workers' Union and imprisoned in Moscow, where he first heard of Lenin. In 1898, he joined the Russian Social Democratic Party. Between 1901 and 1903, he wrote for Iskra, when Iskra was under the influence of Lenin, right, and was revolutionary. But, and in 1983, Trotsky met Lenin, and Lenin recommended him for the editorial board of Iskra.
In 1903, yes. Not 1983, right?
1903.
Right.
Did I say 1993?
Well, I heard 1983.
Sorry.
I don't know.
Yeah, in 1983, he met Lenin, and Lenin recommended him for the editorial board of Iskra, which had the six editors, including Martov, Plekhanov. And... it's funny because in 1903, here's Lenin recommending Trotsky to the editorial board, and just a few months later we have the split,
right,
and Lenin begins to refer to Trotsky as Judas, a scoundrel, and swine for, right, taking the part of what really were the kind of reformist counter-revolutionaries, in a sense.
Right.
Okay, so then between 1904 and until 1917, but really between 1906, to be precise, and 1917, Trotsky described himself as a non-factional social democrat, allegedly trying to reconcile different groups within the party, because... Right. This period follows the failure of the 1905 revolution,
right,
so we have a lot of confusion and contrasts within the party. But Lenin argued that Trotsky's outcry of unity was destruction of unity,
right?
And we've seen this playing in the Spanish Civil War. We tried to document that. Now Lenin comments that Trotsky's non-factionalism is splitting tactics, and he even said, I think, I don't know if he, in a letter to maybe to Inés Arman, but I'm not quite sure. I don't have the source. Anyway, Lenin said that non-factionalism is splitting tactics. Trotsky possesses no ideological and political deficitness.
Right.
His non-factionalism is a pattern to flit to and fro.
Right.
Okay, but let's look at number two here. What role did Trotsky play in the 1905 revolution? This is very interesting because Lenin in the 1905 revolution was in Moscow and Trotsky was in Petrograd. And Lenin derived lessons for 1917 from this revolution. And so that's what I want to highlight. So what role did Trotsky play in the 1905 revolution? Where did he stand? What did he support? So we find... what was the 1905 revolution? Was a wave of mass political and social unrest as a result of many things, but among them the Russo-Japanese War, the cramping, the Russification, the policy of Russification by the Tsar, which upset nationalities, the downturn of the economy in around 1890s, several factors went to and the opening of university schools. There were so many contradictory policies, but the opening of universities to young who became young revolutionaries or the bourgeoisie in the university was getting ideas about revolution or social change. So there was a lot of many factors contributing to this uprising: the war, the oppression of nationalities, the downturn of the economy, the awakening of the bourgeoisie, the children of the bourgeoisie in the university, reaching for ideas of change.
Right.
So I'll finish in a minute. So this unrest, this mass political and social unrest, spread throughout vast areas of the Russian Empire, with strikes, peasant uprising, and military formation, mutinies. Actually, it led, and this revolution led to constitutional reform, including the establishment of the State Duma, sort of a multi-party system, and a Russian constitution of 1906. But the State Duma had only consultative powers. So, did you want to say something?
No, I'm following with you.
I just have to do this historical background.
No, this is good. This is useful. It's very useful. Go ahead, continue.
Okay. So, now, as background, this unrest and agitation against the Russian government came to a head in St. Petersburg. It was called St. Petersburg.
Yeah, then. Petrograd, St. Petersburg, Leningrad, yeah. Same city. Yep.
Yeah, Petrograd, St. Petersburg. St. Petersburg became Petrograd during World War One.
Right.
Mm. So, at this time, St. Petersburg, the agitation started in St. Petersburg on the 3rd of January, 1905, Julian calendar, when a strike broke out at the all-important Putilov Works in the city. At this time, Trotsky was in New York. Now, this Putilov Works is crucial. In 1868, it was purchased by Nikolai Putilov and named the Putilov Company.
Right.
And it produced a rolling stock for railways. Now, it boomed during the industrialization of the 1890s. With the workforce quadrupling in a decade, reaching 12,400 workers in 1900.
Nice.
Traditionally, they produced goods for the Russian government and railway products. But starting in 1900, it also produced artillery, eventually becoming a major supplier to the Imperial Russian Army alongside the state arsenal. by 1917, it grew into a giant enterprise that was by far the largest in the city of St. Petersburg. So this was a big...
Yeah, what we're talking about here is sort of like, you know, the Tsar's, what do you call it, military-industrial complex, to a degree. This is one of the major manufacturers.
Exactly. Strike breaks out at Boeing.
Yeah. I mean, the main overland shipping transportation, modality at that time was rail. They manufactured rail cars and they manufactured weapons. There's your military industrial complex, basically.
Yeah, exactly. So, so this single factory, the Putilov factory, single strike, grew into a general strike. And by 7 January 1905, there were 140,000 strikers in St. Petersburg. But on Sunday, 9 January 1905, the famous father, Gapon, Georgi Gapon, led a peaceful procession of citizens through the streets to the Winter Palace to beseech the Tsar for food and relief from the oppressive government. This shows that this Gapon and these people actually thought of the Tsar as somebody who didn't oppress them, but it was all these other people that oppressed them.
Right.
And they were going to intercede to their little father to help. The palace guard fired on the demonstration, resulting in the death of 1,000 demonstrators.
Right.
And this Sunday became known as Bloody Sunday.
Sunday.
Now, this
Bloody Sunday, right.
Now, this is the moment when Trotsky decides to return to Russia in February 1905, and he becomes chairman of the organization, which was mainly Menshevik, of the party's agenda. But what he does, and this I'm setting up in contrast to what happened in Moscow under Lenin's leadership. And the Moscow uprising is the end of the 1905 uprising, and it's seldom talked about.
Right.
Have you?
No, it's later. It's later in the year. We're talking September, October, when that starts happening.
It's later, yeah. It's the concluding chapter.
Right.
And whereas Petersburg is the opening chapter.
That's right.
Moscow is the concluding chapter. But under... And so what Trotsky did, he succeeded... Well, anyway, he became chair of the Petersburg Soviet. And actually what is called pragmatic by sympathetic to Trotsky, people sympathetic to Trotsky, is called a pragmatic gesture, called off the general strike because, and this is the crucial mistake of reform parties, called off the general strike because it was feared that it would provide the imperial government with an excuse for greater oppression. Now, let's pause there, because Lenin will have a lot to say in an analysis of the Moscow uprising, if I get to it today.
Right.
Now, let's pause that. What did Trotsky's called pragmatic thing do? It said, we cannot go further than a strike because there will be a massacre. Now, several things follow from that. It is assumed, just let me give two examples.
Go ahead.
In the modern times, Allende had the same fear. That is, I cannot arm the people because there will be a slaughter.
Right.
Mossadegh same thing.
Right.
In Iran, cannot open the arsenals to the people because they will be crushed and there will be bloodshed.
Right. One of the problems here with, you know, confronting this issue is that there are some times when caution should be counseled because that's what's appropriate to the conditions. And there are other times when you need to push forward because that's what's required by the conditions. And people come to this, too many people come to these questions with some ideological framework that doesn't adjust to the reality of the world, but rather you're either a true revolutionary and you push, or you're very cautious all the time, really a reformist, and you wait for a long period of time. Looking in hindsight, there was a slaughter in Chile anyway, because Allende didn't arm the workers. The workers ended up being slaughtered in one way or another, slowly in some ways, but there was a bloodbath at the beginning of that coup. And the same in Iran. I mean, you had the Shah for 20 years after that. I mean, that is about, you know, that's about as bloody as it gets. But this is mischief-making that Trotsky's people have been able to do for many years. You know, they point to Stalin as being, you know, a bloodthirsty, you know, dictator, et cetera, et cetera. Right. However, the Soviet Union endured, you know, 40 years after Stalin's death, more or less. You know, most of these other people, Trotsky has no place that he ever built. There's no revolution that he really led and or sustained. And so, you know, when you come to this question of should you push for, I mean, because we're confronted with it in Venezuela, we were in Brazil, and we'll be again probably in Argentina, and all these different places. Do you push all the way through and arm the people and all of that, or do you counsel, you know, to go slow and accommodate? You have to analyze the whole picture. That's my point. I wanted to say that.
Yep, exactly. When is it right? When is it possible? This is what Lenin will contrast in Moscow. You know, with, just a sec, I'll go on. It's very, very interesting. So the implication here is if you start a strike, are you prepared? How the state is going to react, even a strike, you know, the state is going to react in a way that is not going to be pleasant. What are you doing to prepare for that? Are you just going to pull out? You know,
right.
That's the question. So, okay, so I am going to pick up now. We were in Petersburg.
Right, and you wanted to jump over to Moscow, or?
Yeah. So, yeah, you know, the Mensheviks in the majority, there were Bolsheviks in the Petersburg Soviet and all sorts of shades of revolutionaries, but the Mensheviks, Plekhanov, dominated. And with those, Trotsky sided. And so so the task of the Petersburg Soviet consisted of organization and coordination of strike action and supplies for the workers. But in practice, the Soviet's policy remained moderate. This is ironic.
Yes.
With its most extreme actions being an appeal for its supporters to refuse to pay taxes and to withdraw their bank deposits. Now, I don't really know what bank deposits the workers might have had.
Right.
So, and let alone the peasants. So, you know, to be negative, Trotsky made theatrical speeches in Petersburg. And meantime, in Moscow, eventually, Lenin and the Bolsheviks were organizing mass uprising in Moscow, or at least were trying to, military uprising. And Trotsky and the Mensheviks in Petersburg condemned these. So in asking that the people not pay taxes, his policy was not different from that of the cadets, which was a party that was parliamentary monarchist. So, you know, here we have a sort of bourgeois, middle class, whatever you want to call it, ideology that is, oh yeah, don't have any violence, don't go beyond the strikes. And this is essentially what Trotsky's role was in Petersburg. Now, we now pass to the Moscow uprising, which doesn't get much traction, but it was extremely important to Lenin and to the future organization and the way the 1917 revolution happened.
Yes.
What he noticed was that practice runs away. Practice is ahead of theory.
And it, more specifically in this case, and people want more detail, there's lessons of the Moscow uprising by Lenin. The workers ended up moving ahead of their leaders. Their leaders were counseling caution. The workers were saying, what is to be done next? And then going out to do it because they weren't getting any instruction. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Very important to read Lenin, Lessons of the Moscow Uprising, 1906. Where did you find it?
It's on at Marxists.org. That's a plural, Marxists.org. It's an archive.
Is that the French site?
No, this is it's English.
It's in English, but is it the French communist something or other?
No,
because
no,
I couldn't find it.
I forget who maintains this site,
okay.
But yeah.
Doesn't matter. Yep. Lenin, Lessons of the Moscow Uprising, 1906. I will read some.
It's the Marxist Internet Archive, and it's Marxists.org.
Okay, yeah. Makes sense.
Go ahead. Sorry. So go ahead. So you were basically describing this, the situation in Moscow.
In Moscow, which is the ending chapter of the 1905 revolution. It opened with Petersburg, and now we, at the end, we have the Moscow event. At the beginning. Lenin says, mainly I'm quoting from that, or glossing or summarizing. He notes that the principal forms of the December movement in Moscow were peaceful strike and demonstrations. And these were the only form of struggle in which the vast majority of the workers took an active part. But yet the December actions in Moscow vividly demonstrated that the general strike, this is so important, as says Lenin, as an independent and predominant form of struggle is out of date.
Yeah.
That the movement is breaking out of these narrow bounds with elemental and irresistible force and giving rise to the highest form of struggle and uprising.
Yep.
So he goes on, in calling the strike, all the revolutionary parties, all the Moscow unions recognized and even intuitively felt that it must inevitably go into an uprising.
Yep.
On December 6th, sorry, go ahead.
No, that's right. That's exactly right. We are out
You're
of time.
You're reading along.
No. Yeah, I am. And we're out of time, but I want to pick up there because the really key thing here are the three lessons that Lenin articulates in this piece. And to me, this is the core one is the second lesson that he lists, that insurrection is an art. And the principal rule of the art is that the waging of a desperately bold and irrevocably determined offensive, that's a truth that has to be assimilated. And so we're going to pick up there next week. And Luciana, thank you very much.
Thank you, Don. Pleasure to be with you.
The same. And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.